This episode of Cognitive Dissonance is brought to you by our patrons. You fucking rock. Be advised that this show is not for children, the faint of heart, or the easily offended. The explicit tag is there for a reason.
Recording live from Glory Hole Studios in Chicago and beyond, this is Cognitive Dissonance. Every episode we blast anyone who gets in our way. We bring critical thinking, skepticism, and irreverence to any topic that makes the news, makes it big, or makes us mad. It's skeptical, it's political, and there is no welcome mat. Today is Thursday, July 25th. Or approximately 900 political years since the last time that we recorded, Cecil.
It's so crazy to me that, like, we record on Thursdays and so much happened this week.
I sat down. I was like, hey, when did Biden drop out? We had to look through our text messages.
We didn't know.
That was Sunday.
It was Sunday. We didn't know.
It was 5 days ago, man.
We forgot about it.
Yeah.
It was so long ago you forgot when it actually happened in relation to the rest of your life.
Because everything else has happened.
And I remember when it happened because as soon as I saw, I was outside. I walked outside. My wife was doing some yard work. And I walked outside because I was inside. And I walked outside and I sort of leaned over and I was like, hey, just so you know, Biden dropped out. And she was like, she took her gloves off and she ran inside and sat down in front of the TV to see exactly what happened. Because this has been something that's been brewing for some time. Since the debate, there's been a push for Biden to step aside. And there's been, at least on the face of it, there's been some tension on whether or not he would.
Yeah.
And there was been also in just conversations with our audience, there's been tension on whether or not he should or shouldn't.
Right.
What happened is something similar to what I had suggested, which was that the person who would step up and be the nominee would be Kamala.
Yeah.
His vice president would be the person who would step up. Now, I originally said that I think if Joe can't run a campaign, I don't feel like Joe should be involved in the running of a country. After saying that, though, I got a chance to see what happens in this universe with him not stepping down and her running.
Yeah.
And I really feel like it's advantageous for him to stay in as the president, where I didn't think it was before, because I didn't have the foresight to see what would happen. And what I'm seeing, what is happening is that they have to divide their attacks. They have to attack Joe Biden, who's currently the president, and then they have to attack Kamala Harris, who is also the vice president, but who is running.
I also think there's an important distinction to be made between whether or not he's competent to be the president and whether or not he's capable of winning the race against Trump.
That's also another important distinction.
I feel like the most important job that Joe Biden has coming up politically is to do every single thing he can do to make sure Trump does not win. And if one of those things is to step down, then that is his fucking job. His job then would be to step down to let somebody else defeat Trump. Trump is the obstacle that must be defeated. He is the dragon that must be slain. We have to accept this as an existential truth for our country, right? I think we all agree, at least you and I do, Cecil, that like the most dangerous thing would be not beating Trump.
Yeah.
So Biden's job, even if I believe, and I do, I think Biden, from all indications, still has his marbles. I think I think he's as sharp as he needs to be? I don't. Do I think I want somebody with more energy? I do. Do I think I want somebody who can, you know, command a room in a bigger and more immediate way? Absolutely. I don't think that he's functionally incompetent, though. I really don't.
Yeah, I don't either.
So, like, his job is to beat Trump. And if stepping down is one of the things that he has to do to help beat Trump, then that's an obligation he has to this country. That is an obligation he has to the people.
What I think happened was that we had that conversation the week after he had that debate.
Right.
And on that debate stage, it appeared to me that he looked a little befuddled.
Yeah.
He was slow in his answers. He lost his place a few times. He didn't look he didn't inspire confidence.
No, not at all.
And so what I was saying at that moment in time was that, you know, if he isn't competent, then I don't want him to do it. But I saw, and I even said on the last show, and that over the last several weeks, I feel like he's rebuilt that reputation up. He had interviews, had press conferences, did things that would require a high level of competency and did okay.
Yeah. Right.
And so I felt like I said last week, I even said on the show, if it's Joe, great. If it's somebody else, great.
Yep.
I'm okay with it either way. What happened was really interesting because he stepped down and I think this is so unique and so such an amazing thing because I see it as Joe thinking of the country before himself. Yes. That's how I see it.
Yep.
There's other people who tried to immediately try to say, well, he was forced out they're like, he should have stepped out earlier. I want to address those two things in particular. The first one is he was forced out. If you say that and you keep repeating that, you're taking away the autonomy of this great act. You're saying he didn't want to step down. He wasn't being selfless and he was forced out. So not only was he forced out, he was too weak to fight for his own position. That's essentially just insulting the man.
Right.
There's nothing redeeming about him being forced to step down. There is something redeeming about his political career if he decides to step down and is powerful enough to recognize that the country comes before him.
Yeah.
So I think that is a narrative that I'm going to keep myself, which is I think that Joe Biden has been a pretty good president, and I think what I want him, the legacy I want to remember is Joe Biden stepping down for the betterment of this nation. And then the other piece, when people were saying he should have done it earlier, he should have done it during, but you know, we should be actually had a primary, he should have done this, all this back and forth about this. And I will say this, that reeks of people who might not have ever really noticed that they were aging. I look at myself, you know, I look at myself up here in this thing, and I see like, my hair isn't as full as it used to be, and my beard is grayer than it used to be, and my eyes have bags in them under them that they never used to be there. And when I think about myself, I think about myself as a 25-year-old.
Yeah.
Right. I don't think about myself in his early 50s. I think about myself as a 25-year-old. So once in a while, I'll catch myself and I'll look at myself and be like, damn. Fuck, bro, I got old. When that happened, yeah, right? When
too,
that
man.
Fucking happened. Or, yeah. You know, I go to move something and I'm like, oh, I think I might have pulled something. Or, wow, that's heavier than it used to be. Or, I can't run because I hurt my knee or right. whatever, right? There's a reality of the human body that you become aware of more as you grow older.
Sure, yeah.
And maybe Joe was running around and doing a whole bunch of shit for a long time and busy in his own thoughts. But he really sat down and he watched that debate. And he thought, man, I wasn't as sharp as I thought I was. Maybe he had some hard realizations and some yeah. hard conversations between there. Because I don't think that Joe Biden, especially stepping down now, that tells me that he's at least somewhat selfless. And he would have done this earlier if he'd have known. But I just don't think he knew.
I want to address both of those as well. Because I think just a yes and both of those points. Like, you know, I think that Joe's career, and one of the things I've always liked about Biden is that even when I've disagreed with a stance that he's taken, I think he's been a man who has acted with a great deal of personal and professional integrity, an enormous amount of personal and professional integrity. I have not always agreed with every policy position he's always had. Of course not. He's got a long career. I haven't agreed with everything he's done as president. I like him overall as a politician, understanding that no politician am I going to agree with on everything, even some really important things. That's the nature of how that work works. But I think that he is a man of real integrity. And I think that he's lived a life that has been built largely on what it really means to be a civil servant. I see that reflected in his actual actions. Most of the work that he has done has been for the betterment of others and not for the strategic betterment of himself. And I think that there's very little to point to that shakes a finger at the integrity of Joe Biden. So why would this be different?
Why is this the one?
Why would this one moment be the one moment that is suddenly different? I just don't believe that.
I don't buy it.
I don't buy that. I also don't think people walk away from great power like this lightly. they should not walk away from great power and responsibility lightly. When the country votes and 70 plus million people show up and say, we'd like you to do this, we trust you to do this. If you're going to make a decision to say, actually, in retrospect, I'm not the right guy. I thought I was, but I'm not. That's a sober moment. That's a somber moment. That moment takes time and a realization to come to. Recognize that, like, he's a fucking person who should be taking his time making sober, somber, difficult decisions. And I think his stepping back was really an act of true civil servancy and true integrity. And I respect the shit out of it. And I think it secures that legacy for him in a way that I don't think it would have been secured had he gone on to fight for a second term and potentially lost that term or you know, potentially aged poorly into that term. You know, it's also the case, to your point, like, we only know what we know when we know it. We do not arrive at our own conclusions of ourselves and about also, like, how strategically valuable something would be to do until we arrive at that, right? Maybe there would have been a better time for him to do this. Maybe a primary would have been better. I don't actually agree with that. But maybe, just to give, like, the critics their due, maybe that would have been better. But, like, we don't know everything ahead of time. We don't know everything at the right time. We come to understand certain things when they become fucking sometimes glaringly obvious to ourselves. Like, I don't feel 46 unless I walk in front of a mirror and I catch myself in a bad angle and I'm like, oh, that's not good anymore. That's a shitty self now. But, like, earlier I didn't feel that way. I'm sure, like, Joe going into debate probably felt fucking confident, man. He probably did.
I want to give you guys a narrative that I want you to keep. And this is not true. This is only my own headcanon of what happened. So I want to give it to you, and I want you to keep it. Joe Biden, this is, I want to reiterate before I even start this sentence. This is not true. Okay, this is Cecil making up a story.
Yep.
But I want to tell it because I think it makes Dark Brandon better. Joe, leading up to the debate, felt pretty good, but then he practiced for the debate. And Joe didn't do very good in the practice. Joe was like, fuck, I'm not as sharp as I was and I'm not doing very well. So he went into that debate and he said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to emphasize my senior moments in this debate. I'm going to hold my mouth open when I stand there. I'm going to really emphasize these moments. I'm going to be old Joe Biden.
Right.
I'm going to give them a real big target and a talking point about how old I am. And he has the debate, and that's what the talking points are, and that's what everybody talks about for weeks afterwards. And then he decides to wait until after their primary, where they spend
all their energy.
And to be honest, this I actually do believe that he actually did know probably before their convention, and he just didn't do anything about it. But they spent all their energy attacking Joe, how old Joe Biden was. And every single person who came up had a comment about how old Joe Biden was. And then Joe Biden steps down.
Yep.
And he's suddenly not the oldest guy in the room. So I want you to think about it not as Joe Biden stepping down, but Joe Biden 4D chess, Dark Brandon 4D chessing this into this new reality, which is Kamala Harris, the vice president, is now the nominee, the presumptive nominee, because every single delegate, I think, so far, or every state so far, the head of every state came out and said, and all the governors said, so there hasn't been a fight for power, which was one of the reasons why I think a lot of people were nervous.
That's me. I was nervous that there was going to be a Democratic shit show infight that was going to last weeks, that was going to create a lot of chaos. And, like, I will say too, like, is that primaries are damaging to candidates, right? Like, we've seen this. Like, Nikki Haley, Nikki Haley went out and told the world what a shithead Donald Trump was.
They're using it now.
She got a ton. Like, primaries are damaging to their own candidates, to the candidates on their own side, because people are primarying against. So if we had people primarying against Kamala Harris, people would have gone out and pointed out all the flaws and the problems and the weak points, et cetera, et cetera. That's not good for our side. That's good for the other side, right? In just the exact same way that Nikki Haley going out and talking about what a shit Donald Trump is actually good for us, right? Because some people will hear that message and they'll be like, I'll vote for Nikki, but not for Trump. And now there's a movement. Nikki, like it's like Haley fans
Haley voted
for Harris.
Biden. It was for Biden, now they're for Harris.
So, you know, primaries are not risk-free. And we should have primaries under normal circumstances. It's also the case that there is a mechanism through the convention to raise somebody to the point of nominee that does not require a primary. And there is historical precedent for that situation, right? Johnson is a great example. So there's a mechanism for this. This isn't like extra, like outside the course of possibility and never before happened. Like there this is fine.
There's also been a bunch of people who were saying like, well, she couldn't even win a state when she ran before. She dropped out of the 2020 race real early, the primaries early, and she couldn't even win a state. That was before she was the vice president.
I know, man.
Like we can't be controlling fucking, we can't be bringing up polls from 4 years ago, or you also can't be bringing up polls from this particular primary season.
Yeah, well,
because they don't mean
anything. They don't mean anything. Also, like when she ran in 2020, she wasn't running against Trump.
Yeah.
She was running in a field full of who would you like to be the Democratic candidate. It makes me crazy when people compare the results of a primary, which ask a fundamentally different question than the results of a general election, which ask a very different question. They're not the same question. So why would you look at the answer as if it was fucking portable from one question to the other? They're not asking the same thing. Yeah. They're not asking all of America, who would you like to be president? This one person or this one person? That's not the question in a primary. The primary question is, who do you want your candidate to be from this slate of many to fight the other guy in the next set of elections? Like, it's fucking different. It's just different. So it makes me nuts when people look at the different question and like, well, I know the answer to 2 + 2 = 4. So obviously 5 + 5 = 4 or not 4 or however that works. I don't know. It doesn't make sense.
I wonder if the Democratic Party should start more. I know that everybody wants the job, right? So everybody wants the job of president. That's why they're up there. They want that job. And they're hungry, and these are people who are driven and want that position, and they want to be in that spotlight, and they don't want to give it up. But maybe there should be a more of a push on these primaries on the Democratic side to yes and each other and be supportive of each other and be supportive and do less attack ads on each other.
Yeah, man.
Like, I think like you should all get into a huddle ahead of time and be like, we're all on the same team. If one of us gets picked as a captain, that's cool, but we all got to be cool with each other. And I feel like what's happened is that the language around politics in our country has turned into that of attack, and it's never turned in and it hasn't turned into that of support your party and hopefully the best one gets picked.
Yeah, man, if I totally agree. If the primaries were run as a party unity first, individual selection second, it would be a million times better, because you would not end up with this mudslinging primary where we dig up dirt on our own people, then pretend to erase it away later when we want to put them up as in the fucking general election. That's a bad thing to do. It's just dumb. I'm thrilled. I am beside myself, fucking ecstatically excited about this change. And I'm excited because I think this brings a level of energy into this election that we desperately needed. The grandpa versus grandpa fight, America was not impressed. Poll after poll, man on the street interview after man on the street interview. You talk to people about, what do you think about this election? Everybody was like, fuck, this is not the election we want. Fuck, I don't even like that. The energy here was like zero. Zero. There were people who are deeply into politics who always were going to vote. They always had strongly held beliefs, but that's not most of America. Most of America's not like you and I, man. Most of America's not like listening to political podcasts and reading the news every day and like deep into the weeds on issues. Like, that's not most of this country. Most of this country was not excited about this. Gen Z, super unexcited about the fucking white grandpa fight that we were looking at. People of color, super not excited. This was a bad election between two candidates that America was unexcited about. And now it's changed. Now it's so different. All of a sudden, snap of your fingers, and we have an entirely new game. And I think it's wonderful.
It reminds me, so some people will be listening might not remember, but it very much reminds me of when Barack Obama was running in 2008.
Feels like it.
It feels very similar. There's a feeling of youth, a feeling of different, a feeling of not the same old white guy,
yeah.
right? It feels different and it feels energizing. The amount of money that they pulled in a couple of days was over $130 million in just a couple of days.
Staggering.
Blew the Republicans out of the water in the sense that they had a bunch of stuff leading in that should have been boosting their poll numbers.
Yeah.
They should have been boosted their poll numbers because they picked up vice president, and that should have been something that boosted their poll numbers. They just had a kerfuffle with the previous president getting shot at. That should have been something that should have carried them a little bit. And it's nothing. They essentially died the fuse out on it, and there's nothing. And they're actually going down. You're starting to see polls across the country start to be turning and flipping to Harris
yeah.
instead of being for Trump. And I want to say real quick, because I know I saw some people saying, like, you know, well, when this fails, I'll tell you so, or whatever, or this and that. There's been a back and forth between a lot of people who have been talking, because there's a lot of people who very much didn't want Biden to drop out. They thought
right.
it was a bad idea. They thought it was a genuinely bad idea. And then there was other people who were saying Biden should drop out. We think that'll energize the party. And they were on the other side, right? I feel like first and foremost, we have to remember that both of those people wanted the best for America.
Yes, yes, yes.
Both
yes.
those yeah. sides. There's the other side that didn't get Joe to stay in. You wanted the best thing for America. You were worried. You looked over at Trump and you said, I don't want that. I want the best. I want the best chance for no Trump. I want the best chance for a progressive America.
That's exactly.
And
true.
You, they didn't choose your path. And I also would say there is no way to know whether or not, like if let's say we go through the whole thing and Kamala Harris loses.
Yeah.
There's no way to know that Joe would have won. And the other thing is that if we go through this whole thing
yeah.
and Kamala wins, we had no way of knowing Joe Biden wasn't going to win.
That's right.
So there is never, ever going to be, I told you so. There can't be, because they wanted the best for America and we can't ever know. It's like when you argue with those Bernie bros who are all like, well, yeah. Bernie would have won in 2016 yes. if it wasn't for Hillary. How the fuck do you know, dude? You, what are you fucking, you got a Karnak envelope? Because fucking yeah. you have no idea.
Yeah, that's exactly right, man. I think about this from time to time. Like, we don't have the ability, sadly, to just run the simulation sure. a bunch of times and then look how it rolls out and be like, well, I'm certain that we're not, you know, you're not. None of us are certain. I'm excited right now. I'm excited because there does seem to be a palpable sense of real excitement in the air. But if Harris loses, that doesn't mean Joe would have won. It doesn't mean we made the wrong call. If Harris wins, to your point, it doesn't mean we wouldn't have also won with Joe. We don't know. We don't have no idea.
Don't have any
like,
idea.
I feel like if there's anything we should all have collectively learned from 2016 forward is that what do you think is going to happen is not going to happen.
Great point, dude.
Right? Like, I think about this all the time. You ever do that thing like, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And if you write that down, and you look and you say, God, if somebody asked me in 2015, what do you think 2020, your world is going to look like? I'd have gotten nothing right. Nothing right. You know, if in 2017, somebody said, hey, what do you think the world's going to look like? What do you think your world's going to look like in 2023? I'd have got it all wrong. We get it wrong all the time. We overestimate our ability to prognosticate. We do it constantly. We think that we have a grasp on where we're headed because, like, probably tomorrow isn't going to be much different than today. But yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. Sometimes there's a pandemic. Sometimes presidents get shot at. Sometimes, like, candidates drop out of the race. Big, important, fundamental, shifting things happen. Yeah. They happen all the time. They're happening constantly. We're wrong about most things. We're wrong about most things. Our ability to predict into the future is bad. It's always bad. We're making our best guesses and hoping and doing the things that we can do in the moment because we feel that we're led by our conscience. When we feel like we're acting based on our conscience, we feel like, all right, today I made the right decisions for me today. And if they add up and they aggregate to the right thing, then I think we have a tendency to give ourselves a pat on the back like we knew it all along. Mm-hmm. We all do it. But if they add up to the wrong thing, we look for an excuse because we made all the decisions leading up to it. We should just recognize that, like, there's a lot of chaos in this. There's a lot of shit that's outside of our control. This is the thing that happened. I'm embracing that, that this has happened because I am excited, because the sense that I have sitting in this chair today, July 25th, Thursday at 9:56, is generally very positive. Dude, that could shift tomorrow.
It could, absolutely. You know, like, and one of the things that could easily shift it is these narratives that people are starting to bring up. And I'm seeing it on the left too. There's these narratives that people are bringing up and they're sharing these things because they wanted a primary. Yeah. They didn't want this candidate. Well, here's the thing, man. She was the most likely candidate as the vice president.
Yeah,
like of all the people out there, she's the most likely. Nobody yeah. else. It's not like you're going to get Pete Buttigieg up from the transportation department to come up and run. You're going to get her to run. And then they're also bringing up stuff that she did as a district attorney, which may or may not have been unethical and bad, right? There's a possibility, but that's also 10 years ago. That's a long time ago. And they're talking about things like her record on marijuana. And yeah. you say, you know, like her record on marijuana is probably going to be very different from her record on marijuana when she was a DA to where she is now. And it is very different. And allow people to change their minds. Allow people to come to realizations. Allow people to grow. Don't bring up something from 2015
yeah, man.
If she has a different opinion about it now.
Yeah, and also recognize that different jobs require her to have different responsibilities. And we have a different amount of autonomy when we're different roles. Our opinions change. Like, I don't think it's reasonable actually to say, well, how she behaved as a prosecutor is an exact reflection of her personal values. She had a job as a prosecutor. There's a certain amount of wiggle room within that job, but there's not infinite latitude based on your personal values. You're prosecuting the law.
Yeah.
You are not I'm not bound by the fucking laws because I'm the prosecutor.
If you don't prosecute people.
Yeah, that's not right? how that works.
Yeah.
So when you have a job, you have a set of responsibilities and you take actions based on the responsibilities of that job. So we can get a sense broadly of what her values probably were. But the best way to look is to say, hey, where are you at now?
What do you think now?
Because like it's 2024. And I got to tell you, if somebody had asked me, hey, 2015, Tom, do you think you'll turn into 2024, Tom? I'd be like, no.
Yeah,
I probably would have gotten me wrong.
Yeah,
I probably would have gotten a lot of me wrong. So like, I also think that like that I didn't want it to happen this way is not really a very useful measuring stick for politics. I didn't want it to happen this way. We should have had I wish we'd had a primary. Well, we didn't. I know you wish that, but we didn't. So this is what we have. Like politics is always a game of practical realities. And like, there's this like strain of, but I wish it was better. I wish we had ranked choice voting. I wish, yeah, I'm me too. But also we don't. And like, you can wish it over here and there's a time for wishing, but there's also a time for acting. And now is the time for acting. We're 6 months from the election. We're not even 6 months. We're 4 months, right?
100 days.
We're 100 Soon. Days
like
away.
Next week is like 100 days or something yeah. like that.
Let's worry about what we wish happened after we defeat the authoritarian fascist
yeah.
who is literally trying to destroy this country and our future
yeah.
and like fucking women and LGBTQ people and the environment. Like I am down with worrying about all those important ideological things. I am. They are worth worrying about, but not for the next 101 days. Yeah. Let's get on day 102. We can talk
let's
all
talk,
we want.
Let's figure talk, it out.
Let's figure it out. Let's put a plan yeah. in place. Make sure it doesn't happen again.
And you know
I'm
what?
Down with you guys.
You know what? Here's the thing. If after she, if let's just say she wins and you want to primary her first year because she didn't actually have a primary, I don't know that I'd be against it.
Yeah.
If you want to primary the incumbent because you think, you know
Dude,
what?
Yeah.
We should definitely, she didn't have a primary, so we should do it. I think if she's doing a good job, don't do that because that's stupid. But,
right.
you know, I mean, if somebody thinks that that's a good idea or whatever, then, you know, like maybe that gets fought for. I don't feel like I'd be against it in principle. I would probably be against it in practice if she's doing a good job. I don't feel like
yeah,
that.
I don't. And I also, again, strategically, I do not want to make a bad strategic choice.
I think it'd be a bad strategic
right?
choice.
And hurt our chances of winning.
But you know, a couple of things that have already been attacked about her, that I've already attacked her for is you're going to hear this a lot. She's a DEI hire. You're going to hear that a lot.
Jesus Christ.
That's them not like Either they were going to call her a bitch or they were going to call her an N-word. Those are the two options when it comes to DEI hires.
DEI is why not both?
Yeah. That's, I mean, Jesus. You know, to be honest, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. But I think those are the things that they want to point out every chance they get that she's not a white guy.
Yeah.
And to them, that's a negative. But I want to say to everybody else out there, you know, don't take that as a bad word because it's not.
Yeah.
You know what? I don't think she's a DEI hire. I think this lady is fucking 1,000 times smarter than most of the people who are out there who are calling her a DEI hire. Oh, I think she's 1,000 times smarter. And if there was a job applicant, a resume, and an interview process between those people who are calling her a DEI hire and her, she would fucking teabag them.
Yeah.
Like, she would be so fucking, so much more qualified. I don't even care what the job is. Right?
Yeah, does
She'd
not matter.
Be more qualified for that job than they would be. They could pick the job and she's probably more qualified than they are.
Yep.
So I don't believe you that she's a DEI hire. I think she's a competency hire, right? I think she was hired because she was smart and she was somebody who could argue well because she's a prosecutor. And a lot of people said she didn't do good on the debate stage. I remember watching her and thinking she's really good.
Yeah, I
thought she was really good. So I think the reason why he chose her is because she's sharp and because she can argue very well. And I think she is a great face for the future of this country. And I think those were the reasons why he decided to pick her as her running mate. Not anything else. I don't think it was like because she's a black lady.
No.
I think that's stupid to think because, you know, getting a black person on your team doesn't mean it gives you a black vote. That also fucking demeans black people so bad.
So much, man.
So bad. It's just so pathetic. But I hate this comment, and it's happening a lot. So you're going to have to deal with that particular comment that she's a DEI hire. You're going to have to hear that all the time. The other one they're going to say is the immigration czar thing, and that's just factually inaccurate.
Yeah, like the DEI hire is the inevitable retreat into misogyny and racism that the right runs to, right? And the thing is that for them, they run into that because it appeals to them. In their mind, they're saying something that's like, this is a convincing argument, right, guys? And what they want to do, what they're hoping for, is that everybody will put their arms around everybody just like they always did in the fucking good old days. But I don't believe that's America anymore. I don't. I do not believe that that is America anymore. I think that's 70 million people. I think it's a big chunk of America, but I don't think that that's America anymore. I don't think we're interested in that shit. I think that appeals to a base that is already going to appeal to Trump. They were already to vote for Trump. That this doesn't sway anyone new. Nobody who's swayed by that misogynist, racist bullshit was ever going to vote for Biden. They were always a Trump voter. That rhetoric, it's circular. It's a fucking tautology of fucking like campaign rhetoric. You know what I mean? It circles back to itself. It votes in its left, pulls a vote out of its left pocket, puts it in its right pocket and says, we voted twice, boys. No, you didn't. That's nothing. That's all fucking nothing.
And to be perfectly frank, this is what lost DeSantis the race, was focusing too hard on this.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's
true,
man.
This whole DEI is a bad word, and we're going to push the Overton window so far over that we convince other people that DEI is a bad word. That's all the stuff that made DeSantis flop, right?
Yep, that's true.
So my contention is keep saying it, because if you keep saying it, it keeps pointing out how fucking backward you are. That's all it's doing, is highlighting that. I do want to touch on this immigration thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And very specifically the immigration thing, she was asked not to be a border person because the border is the job of the Homeland Security person. She was asked to go talk to other countries where many immigrants and asylum seekers come from to try to work with them to create programs so that there's a reason for the people to stay and not flee. And so she was funding things and helping those people build these different, you know, programs in their own country so that people wouldn't come here as a way to flee something that's so bad, instead building up those countries to help them keep their residence there. And that's what she was doing.
Yeah, and she was effective at that. One of the things that, like, we have an article in the show notes, but one of the things that they were talking about in the article was that was an effective thing. It's just that it takes time.
It takes time.
It's not like, you can go to, you know, some country in Central America, which is where initially the first big wave of immigrants was coming from. Go to some country in Central America and say, oh, is there, what switch do I come over here and flip that makes it better and more palatable for people to live here, where there's better opportunity, less crime, et cetera, whatever the issues are that need to be addressed, so that people aren't walking all the way through fucking their country and across Mexico and into the border and chase. These are difficult long-term problems to solve. They require an enormous amount of money, an enormous amount of effort. And she was successful.
She's good at it.
She was very successful at that. Part of the reason that the border continues to have so many people coming to it is because some of the demographics have shifted around the people that are coming to that border. So while most of those people initially, not most, but like 40-some percent of those people were coming in from Central America, that number dropped to about 20-some percent. So that's progress. She's made progress. It's just that other people from other parts of the world are now also crossing into that border because the countries they're living in are not providing them the opportunities right. and the safety that they need in order for them to have lives that they want to have. So that work was effective. That work was effective. It's so stupid to look at the border and be like, well, first of all, you're the border czar. That's not a real thing.
Yeah.
Border czar is not a job. It's not a real thing. The czar thing is a stupid, weird thing we do. That's not a real job. She was given a specific task or responsibility. And she carried it out effectively.
That's all you need to know about it. And go read about it. Like I encourage everybody to go read about it. Be ready to take these talking points, these weak, shitty, terrible talking points and just point out the flaws in them because they're easy to point flaws out in, right? Yep. They're very easy to point. And you're going to be dealing with it from now until then. They're going to be talking about, they're going to have to pick, like you said earlier, between misogyny and racism. And we're already seeing the misogyny in some of the logos I've seen that her on her knees, that she had sex in order to get the positions that she's had in government. They would never say that about a guy. They just understand that is inherently a misogynistic attack. There's nobody out there who's like, well, Trump blew his way to the top or whatever.
Right. Yep.
Trump dicked his way all the way up. That's never a thing. So understand it's literally made to be misogynist. And then the other piece, when they talk about the reason why she was hired is because she was black. Again, that's also racism. And it's taking away from her real actual qualities. So I want to mention to everybody that we're in planning talks with the Scathing guys and maybe with other people we're going to see. We're probably going to reach out to some other people to do a live stream fundraiser for the Democratic Party. We're going to wait until after the convention for some particular time when all of our schedules meet up. But keep your eyes posted here. And we're sure any other podcasts that are involved will be mentioning it. But we're going to try to, again, host another live stream where we can raise some money for the Democratic Party and for... If it's Kamala Harris who gets chosen in the DNC, then that's what we'll do. That's yep. That's who we're going to be raising money for so we can hopefully make it so we don't live in a fascist state in the
Jesus,
future.
Yeah.
So, if you're thinking about maybe donating in the future, you know, we could maybe see if we could get some matches ahead of time so that there will actually be some matched money while we start this thing.
Absolutely.
I knew you were cheating on me.
No, he's lying, I swear.
You love her?
My own wife?
So you love her?
Believe me, I've never seen this man before in my life.
Lay off her, Jeff. I'm the one that's been sleeping with your wife, okay? My own brother?
Yeah, one answer and I'll get out of your way. You love her?
And you know what? The sex is great. You satanic bastard.
All right, Tom, we said we were going to cover Project 2025 week after week. I went through this week and I found a couple of pieces. But I want to start out first by talking about who these pieces are written by. Because the narrative that the right is trying to float, they're trying to gaslight us into thinking that they don't know who these people are.
Yeah,
I have no idea who these people are. This is the 20s of Heritage Foundation. Who are these people? I didn't even know who these people are. So before we start, we're going to read a piece from the Department of Health and Human Services, and we're also going to read a piece from the Office of Energy Efficiency and Renewable Energy. And both of those are subheadings in the book, in this 900-page document. Who are the two people, Tom? Let's start here with the first author for Department of Health and Human Services.
So this was written by Roger Thomas Severino. He's born 1974-75. He's an American attorney who served as the director of the Office of Civil Rights at the United States Department of Health and Human Services from 2017 to 2021.
When would that be? Like, what would be the president at that time?
That would be a Trump administration official. He is currently a senior fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center and a contributor on health policy, including abortion and Project 2025. In March of 2017, President Donald Trump appointed Severino as director of the Office for Civil Rights at the United States Department of Health and Human Services, and he left that position January the 15th, 2021.
Well, that seems like right before Trump actually left office. Oh. So what do you know? Let's look at this other one, because maybe Trump doesn't know who this guy is, Tom.
Bernard L. McNamee, which I may be pronouncing wrong, but I'm going to decide it's McNamee. He's born in 67. He's a government official who served as commissioner of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission from 2018 to 2020. McNamee was confirmed to the position by the United States Senate on December the 6th, 2018. He previously served in various state and federal legal and policy positions and practiced energy law in the private sector. Well,
there you go. There you go. So when they say, I have no idea who this person is.
Bullshit.
Both of these people served in their administration. This guy had to get confirmed by the Senate.
Yep.
The other person was appointed by Donald Trump himself. These are people who are getting appointed to these positions who are high-ranking officials in the previous administration.
Absolutely.
So don't let them lie to you about, oh, I don't know who this person is. I don't know. Project 2025. Who's that? I have no idea.
Heritage Foundation. This isn't the Heritage Foundation.
Bullshit.
Yep.
Bullshit. They're fucking lying to you because they don't want to fucking own up to this.
That's exactly right.
So let's start with the Department of Health and Human Services. I'm cutting this out now. Again, this is part of the larger. You're welcome to go read the entire Commitment to America or whatever it's called, Blueprint for America. There's a bunch of stuff in there, but these are the pieces that caught my attention in this particular chapter. This is from page 450.
Goal number one, protecting life, conscience, and bodily integrity. The secretary should pursue a robust agenda to protect the fundamental rights to life, protect conscience rights, and uphold bodily integrity rooted in biological realities, not ideology. From the moment of conception, every human being possesses inherent dignity and worth, and our humanity does not depend on our age, stage of development, race, or abilities. The secretary must ensure that all HHS programs and activities are rooted in a deep respect for innocent human life from day one until natural death. Abortion and euthanasia are not healthcare.
What does that tell you about their policy? I mean, you can't open it up farther than they did in there.
Absolutely.
That is the most stringent ideas about abortion put into a book.
They specifically say here, from day one.
Yeah.
From day one. There is no misreading this language, right? There is no misreading the language. The secretary should pursue a robust agenda to protect the fundamental right to life from day one.
And they
what
define,
else can that mean?
They define day one as conception earlier in the right. fucking in the paragraph.
Right.
So that's day one, man.
So from conception, and then abortion is not healthcare. Neither is euthanasia, according to this bullshit. Abortion is not healthcare. And then they're gonna try to say, well, it doesn't say outlaw abortion. Yes, it fucking does. What else could that mean?
Yeah.
Literally, what else could that mean? If that does not mean that, it means nothing. It can't mean anything.
But the thing is it doesn't say we want to ban abortion. Instead, it says it uses 50 words to get around the fact that they want to ban abortion.
Yeah. And everybody knows what it is.
And it gets around, it uses 50 words to get around to say, the government, when it's run by us, is going to do this in the most important division and department of the government that helps support women.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Right. Yeah. A thousand. This is there. What they want is not unclear to anybody. So when these like fact checking dispatch bullshit nonsense, it's not fact checking. It's not fact checking.
It's gaslighting.
Read it. It's gaslighting, dude. That's exactly right.
It's gaslighting. They're saying, well, I didn't exactly say that.
Well, it's just like, oh, I didn't know anybody in the Heritage Foundation. They're in your house, man. Yeah,
they literally, like, you fucking hired them.
It's like answering the door and like you're shuffling somebody behind you and trying to block them with your body. Well, so they can't, like, get the fuck out. I see who's in your house, man.
I don't like or want to know Ian, but I have to know him.
Yeah,
okay.
Yes.
I have to know who he is. You can't.
Unfortunately.
I can't even get through that with a straight face.
Ian is unknowable anyway.
I know,
every time I ask Ian how he's doing, good.
I know. Ian is an unknowable quantity for sure. I want to read these last two in conjunction.
A robust respect for the sacred rights of conscience. This is really important. Both at HHS and among governments and institutions funded by it, increases choices for patients and program beneficiaries and furthers pluralism and tolerance. The secretary must protect American civil rights by ensuring that HHS programs and activities follow the letter and spirit of religious freedom and conscience protection laws.
Think of how far-reaching that is. If that department is the one that gets to roll those out to all those other places that deal with human health, think about that.
A right to conscience, what that means, we've seen it in practice, what that means is that individual providers of health services will be able to decide for you what health services you have a right to receive.
What's best for you.
Yep. So they'll say, oh, here we don't do the morning after pill. Here, we don't perform this procedure.
We don't do gender-affirming care.
Yeah, you don't have access to this kind of medical treatment. You don't have access to that kind of care. You don't have access to these medicines because my conscience overrules your care. That's what the right to conscience means when they combine it here, right?
You're not wrong. Like,
a right to conscience is a horrible thing. A right to conscience when it's related to healthcare, that's a horrible thing.
And the reason why it's horrible is because it's rooted in Bronze Age ideology.
Right.
Right? It's not rooted in some modern thinking that this is dangerous. It's not rooted in that at all. It's rooted in the fact that they don't like it because their fucking sky daddy said, you can't do that. You're not allowed to do that down like in fucking the real, in the actual world instead of in heaven. You're not allowed to do these things. So I'm going to make you abide by the rules of my Bronze Age blood god.
Yeah, because like, here's the thing, Cecil. My conscience tells me that respecting your rights and giving you care and allowing you to make your own decisions about your body, that's what my conscience leads me to do.
Sure.
And even if something that you want might make me uncomfortable, even if something you want might be something that like I would absolutely object to for me, my conscience still tells me the right thing to do is to protect your rights first and not to place my rights
above your own.
Because that's the value system I hold.
And if you feel like you can't fulfill the duty, then don't do the duty.
Right.
Just don't do it. Don't sign up for it. You signed up for it. You went to school for it. You figure that shit out.
But I get to have that value system because it hasn't been dictated to me by a bad book written by a bunch of desert dwellers 2,000 years ago who didn't know how to spell antibiotics.
Yeah, right.
All right, this next paragraph. Radical actors inside and outside government are promoting harmful identity politics that replaces biological sex with subjective notions of gender identity and bases a person's worth on his or her race, sex, or other identities. This destructive dogma, under the guise of equity, threatens America's fundamental liberties as well as the health and well-being of children and adults alike. The next secretary must ensure that the HHS programs protect children's minds and bodies and that HHS programs respect parents.
I want to just say, starting it out with radical actors shows you that they want to push that Overton window as far as they can, right? This is not radical to think, you know, to go to your child and be like, well, how do you feel?
Right.
That's not radical.
There's nothing radical about
that. There's literally nothing radical about
listening to the people that you love is not an act of radical ideology, right?
I mean, it is to these people because they believe there's a top-down fucking,
that's true.
You know, like they definitely have a top-down command structure in their.
You know what? That's absolutely right.
So to them, it's radical. But to everybody else, it's not. It's not radical to ask your child how they feel, right? That's not radical.
Right.
And respect how they fucking feel.
That's right.
And that's the problem is that they think it's radical, but then they're going to convince you that it's radical and then they're going to call it radical. And so from now on, we're always fighting off our back foot.
Yeah. And you know, the other thing is that they are very, just like the abortion issue, right? When they talk about abortion, they will often bring up the specter of the late birth abortion, right? Like the late term, I should say, not late birth, late term abortion, right? Late birth.
I'll eventually have a late birth abortion.
We all will. But they'll bring up the specter of late term abortions because they can then paint a grisly picture, which is very self-evidently easy to be appalled at, right? what they don't do is say, and also this basically never happens. And here are the circumstances when it does happen. And it's essentially only happening to people who are in these unbelievably dire, life-threatening circumstances. And by the numbers, this is statistically actually irrelevant. The thing is, like, with the gender-affirming care, what they bring up is a bunch of shit that isn't happening. So they're talking about kids getting, like, you know, these surgeries, these big, you know, life-altering surgeries. Kids are not by the numbers. They are not getting these surgeries. The kids are not at all getting these surgeries. There are not 12-year-old kids lined up at a gender clinic getting bottom surgery. They're not even 12-year-old kids lined up at the gender clinic getting top surgery. These things aren't happening. This is just the same thing as the specter of the late-term abortion. They want to say, like, isn't this awful? And you're like, but it's not even happening. We're having an argument about something that's not occurring because that's how far you have to take it in order for you to get people on your side. And if you got to take it all the way to that level to get people on your side, your argument isn't good.
Yeah, if you're arguing about something that actually happens, I think people might want to, people may actually listen to you.
Right.
But the problem is that they have to argue from this absurd angle every single time, and it's not real. And so when people pass them off and wave their hand at them, it's because they're not arguing from reality.
That's right.
This next piece is from the Energy Efficiency and Renewable Energy. And you will feel like this is like one of those Trump speeches where he's talking about low-flow toilets.
Under the Biden administration, EERE's mission is to accelerate the research, development, demonstration, and deployment of technologies and solutions to equitably transition America to net zero greenhouse gas emissions economy-wide by no later than 2050 and ensure that clean energy economy benefits all Americans.
How is that bad?
I don't know.
What are you talking about? They put it in here like it's a fucking red letter A.
I do, for real. And it benefits all Americans. How dare you?
How is that possibly bad?
Dude, what world do they want? What? That's the thing I keep thinking. Like, these are the same people that, like, they're working so hard to strip the EPA of, like, all of their the fucking Supreme Court's on board. Like, they're trying to strip the EPA of, like, all of their regulatory agency authority. Like, do you not want clean water? Do you personally want to live in a world that is gross, that is unsafe, that is unclean, that is, like, the air is not good to breathe. The water is unsafe to drink. Beautiful places are no longer beautiful. The wildlife diminishes. Is this, why would you want this? Why?
What I don't get is the worst thing that could happen is we clean up and make sure it's not as gross. That's the worst thing that happens, right? Is that you spend a little extra money. Maybe you didn't, your quarterly profits weren't as big and the place looks a little nicer. That's it. Even if you can't change anything with climate change or something.
Right.
Even the worst thing that happens is it looks a little nicer and your profits are a little down. That's it.
Yeah. Oh,
that's the end of it.
Did we accidentally make the world more beautiful nothing?
And it's not even that your profits are down forever, because if you shift your stance and your motion, you could just change those profits into something else because you have to, you know, you have to do things to adapt. But once you adapt, now you've adapted.
But, you know, there's guys out there that are like, but I own a coal mine. So how am I going to keep getting rich? And it's like, but you're already rich.
Yeah. What do you need more?
Just be cool with it, man.
Be good with it.
That's the other thing is, like, so many of these people, Cesar, are already rich. And I want to be like, just be cool with it.
You're good. You could just be good.
You won the be rich lottery.
Yeah, you're good. Just go on vacation a lot.
Just that's it.
What are you doing?
Call it a day. Dust off
Stop
your hands.
Worrying.
Look.
Stop worrying about your coal mine.
Fuck, dude. All right. Needed reforms. End the focus on climate change and green subsidies. Under the Biden administration, EERE is a conduit for taxpayer dollars to fund progressive policies, including decarbonization of the economy and renewable resources. EERE,
you keep throwing your hands up, but I would too.
EERE is focused on reducing carbon dioxide emissions to the exclusion of other statutorily defined requirements, such as energy security and cost. For example, EERE's five programmatic priorities during the Biden administration are all focused on decarbonization of the electricity sector, the industrial sector, transportation, buildings, and the ag sector.
Okay, sounds good. Anyway.
Right.
Anyway,
those are big sectors,
anyway,
man.
Anyway.
Eliminate energy efficiency standards for appliances. Pursuant to the Energy Policy and Conservation Act of 1975 as amended, the agency is required to set and periodically tighten energy and/or water efficiency standards for nearly all kinds of commercial and household appliances, including air conditioners, furnaces, water heaters, stoves, clothes washers and dryers, refrigerators, dishwashers, light bulbs, and showerheads.
Low flow showerheads. Go ahead.
Current law and requirements reduce consumer choice, drive up costs for consumer appliances, and emphasize energy efficiency to the exclusion of other important factors such as cycle time and repairability.
Bullshit. That's such a fucking lie. It's such a nonsense. And what it's doing is it's saying, what we want to do is give as much choice as we can to the manufacturer and none to you.
Yeah,
that's what we want to do.
Make shit easier to produce, not better.
Yeah.
Not better.
Yeah.
Like my dishwasher takes, I don't know, 2 hours and 55 minutes to run the full clean and sanitize cycle. Why do I care if it got it done in an hour and a half? Why do I care? What, like, cycle time? Why do I care? What different? I set it and go to bed. What the fuck? Who cares? I would rather have it do that. And also, it didn't waste a bunch of fucking electricity. And I got a good result out of it.
The same thing comes with those low flow washers nowadays.
Yeah.
The washer that I have uses very little water, and then it recycles that water, and then it dumps some water out and rinses, but then it uses that water again for the second wash. And you're like, okay,
awesome.
That's great. It's not using a fucking shit ton of water. That's awesome. Why do I care? Like, who is the person out there and being like, throw this fucking thing out. It didn't use enough water. Like, who are you, man? What is happening in your life? Get fucking a hobby. Like, do something. Fucking cross stitch or something, man. Do something else. But Jesus, these people, they scream and cry about this stuff. And Trump can stand on a stage and talk about this for a half an hour. And you think, why do you people care whether there's fucking a gallon or like a half a gallon flushes your shit down the toilet?
If my shit goes away, I'm happy. In my house, I have a new house, right? I have a new construction house. It's full of all these like energy efficient things, right? It's awesome. I can't tell when I'm in the shower.
You can't tell.
It's a low flow shower thing. I get in there, feels like plenty of water. Everything is good and everything is cheaper. Like, my house is so much cheaper to cool and to heat. It's a third of the price of my last, of the price of my last house.
Then it's fucking,
to heat and
that's
cool.
That's fucking brilliant.
And it's still 70 degrees. It's not like I'm like, yo, but I'm going to go light a fire. I'm going to burn coal outside just so I know I did some damage to the world.
Well, the problem is that the reason why we're talking about this, and the reason why I even put this in here, is because I want you to recognize, you know, even if you are one of these people who are like, I don't care about women's rights or whatever. I don't know why you're listening to the show if you are, but let's just say that that's one
re-examine
of
your life.
But like, if you're a young person, these people don't give a fuck about the environment. Like, listen to what Biden was for, and he's for trying to fix some of these harms. Therefore, literally taking that out day one. They want to take that out as quickly as possible. They want to reverse anything he's done. I don't know how you could move through life and be so malicious as they are to the environment. I don't know what the fucking environment did to them in a past life, but seriously, these people hate the environment and they think it stifles our economy, and it doesn't.
No.
It just doesn't. They're just wrong. And they're also very much ready to close down these departments. And if they can't, like in this one in particular, they're talking like, we should just close, like they talk about many times, they're like, we should just close this department down. And if we can't, we should gut it. That's most of this fucking entire fucking book.
Yeah. They want to run the government by not having one.
Yeah.
That's how they want to run the government by having, look, there was a time, I think, a brief time, but there was a time in history where technologically our ability to do damage was not scaled to the place that it is now. But our ability to fuck shit up right now is at such a level, it is at such a scale that if we do not as a people agree, and this is what governments are, is an agreement of people. It's a social contract we write. If we do not as a people agree to not fuck shit up at scale, we will create irreparable damage we never can...
You can't fix it.
There's no turning this clock back.
And these people, they want to go fucking as fast. They see the cliff and they want to hit the gas. And they want to hit the gas in your fucking car.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
Have you ever heard of my Nazi knock-knock joke, Lewis?
No.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
We will ask the questions.
Now get out of here.
Right Wing Watch, Nick Fuentes, who ate lunch with Donald Trump? Never forget that.
Yeah.
Nick Fuentes, who ate lunch with Donald Trump, slams J.D. Vance for having a non-white, non-Christian wife. We've got to play it.
This is just unreal. This fucking this guy is just something else. This is it.
And who's going to take over after Trump? J.D. Vance with his Indian wife. And, you know, I'm not a racist guy. So I'm not saying ignorantly, oh, you have an Indian wife, F you. I'm saying what kind of values does a man have to marry somebody that far outside your race who isn't even a Christian?
Okay, I'm not a racist, but he's marrying somebody really far outside of their race.
Here's the thing. I'm not racist, but the most important thing is race.
What?
Well, I think you don't know what words mean.
God.
Dude, you're fucking clearly a racist.
Dude, you're a super racist.
There's another video, though, where he's like, I am a racist. He just says it out loud. He says, it's not just because I'm a racist that I want this. It's because of this. And you're just like, but also it's because you're
it's
a
because
racist.
Because you're a racist.
Yeah.
It says something about your values. I'm sorry, but people say he's this rural guy from Ohio. You know something? I was raised differently. I was raised with the values that, you know, my parents kind of do expect me to marry. I mean, I don't want to throw my parents under the bus. They'd be fine if I didn't. But it is a value that you marry someone that's like you. You marry someone that's like you. You marry someone that's like the kind of people that you grew up with and like your parents. And you marry a Christian. What kind of man marries somebody that isn't a Christian? What kind of man marries somebody named Usha? Clearly, he doesn't value his racial identity, his heritage. Clearly, he doesn't value his religion. He doesn't marry a woman that professes Jesus Christ. What does that say about him?
Let's play the other one too. Let's play this other one too, so you can hear everything that Nick Fuentes has to say about this.
J.D. Vance also has a non-white wife, an Indian wife, and a kid named Vivek. All his kids have Indian names. So it's like, what exactly are we getting here? And that's not a dig at him just because I'm a racist or something. But it's like, who is this guy really? Do we really expect that the guy who has an Indian wife and named their kid Vivek is going to support white identity?
No. Like, no. Look, here's the thing. I despise J.D. Vance.
Me too, yeah.
I fucking despise him. He is a liar at a level that is only rivaled by his new best friend.
Yeah.
Like he
For
is
real, man. He's a straight-up liar.
Unbelievable
straight
grifter.
Up.
Just a straight-up liar about who he is, liar about his past, liar about his entire personal framing. He is a complete bullshit artist grifter from top to bottom.
When we were in college, there was a guy who said he was the heir to the Budded Fortune.
Yes.
That we met him.
Yes.
And he was this guy who was like, no, you got to drop me off on the block because I'm in the
witness protection program.
And I'm the heir to the Budded Fortune. He said all kinds of fucking
insane
lies. J.D. Vance is also the heir to the
for so like all the things that you could go to J.D. Vance and attack him for, this is actually the only thing about him that I find even remotely personally redeeming, is that he is not, at least in his personal romantic life, behaving in that one moment as a fucking racist.
As a racist. Yeah.
Right. Like, I believe that by joining the Republican Party and supporting Trump,
sure,
you are a racist by definition. Yeah. You cannot support that power structure and pretend you're not a racist anymore.
Yeah.
Like, there's a white genocide going on in the world.
Oh my God.
No, there's not.
White people are being systematically replaced in America and Europe through immigration and to a much lesser extent.
Yeah, actually, I got my card. They said I had to leave to let someone else in. What are you talking about?
The fuck out of here.
What are you talking about, man? Oh, it's so hard to be a white guy. Get the fuck out of here.
First of all,
get the fuck out of here.
I'm pretty fly for a white guy.
Get the fuck out of here. What a fucking idiot. Get the fuck out of here. White genocide.
What would someone think of the white man?
Jesus. You're such a fucking tool, dude. God, I want to lift this guy up by his underwear. I just want to grab him and just like lift him and just like, you know, like those little kids who jump in the jolly jumpers or whatever. I want to make him do that. I want him to like his feet barely touch the ground a few times.
I
want to
dump his racist books.
He's like he
needs dump his Mein Kampf.
He needs the white genocide wedgie is what he needs.
Due to intermarrying. This guy has a non-white wife and a kid named Vivek. This guy is going to be a defender of white identity? I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't either.
This guy's going to defend American identity? If he does, it's going to be no better than any of these other civic nationalists like Vivek Ramaswamy. How else could you countenance American identity if you have a mixed up family like that?
A mixed up family.
Countenance. Okay, everybody look at this guy. This is what he wants. Look at that guy. Come on. Look at him. He's got like such a like a doughy face. Look at that thing.
He looks like an ad for inbreeding.
Get out of here. Well, you're supposed to be the person who's going to be upholding the white race. I'll vibe with it flushing down the toilet if you're the person who we're looking up to. Get the fuck out of here, man. Come on. These guys are so fucking insecure, man. None of these people, every single one of these people wants to fucking preach masculinity and being a man and talking about, and none of these guys, every single one of these guys is cowering in fear their whole life.
Absolutely. Like, this is a guy who's mad that no woman of any race wants anything to do with him.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Right? Like, every race has rejected him, and he's like, all right, it's got to be you guys. At some point, it's got to be you, right? It can't be that I'm deeply fucking unappealing in every way.
Worst.
I know that I'm the common denominator in all of my own rejections.
Oh, boy. You are the worst.
The worst.
Yikes, man. God, this guy's the worst. And I know what's going to happen on YouTube is all you fucking losers who love this guy are going to come and comment on this video because you guys don't have, you have literally nothing better to do with your life than sob in your fucking body pillow of fucking Nick Fuentes about fucking white genocide. You people are losers, man. Holy shit. Get a fucking hobby.
Yeah, show up and comment and boost us in the algorithm, you dumb motherfuckers. Hey, by the way, thanks for the comments, dumb fucks.
Oh, God.
We'll monetize your hate.
All right, that's going to wrap it up for this week. We're going to be back with a funny show on Thursday, and then we'll be back for a full show on Monday. But we're going to leave you like we always do with the Skeptic's Creed.
Credulity is not a virtue. It's fortune cookie cutter, mommy issue, hypno Babylon bullshit. Couched in scientician, double bubble, toil and trouble, pseudo quasi alternative, acupunctuating, pressurized, stereogram, pyramidal, free energy healing, water downward spiral, brain dead pan, sales pitch, late night info docutainment. Leo, Pisces, cancer cures, detox, reflex, foot massage, death and towers, tarot cards, psychic healing, crystal balls, Bigfoot, Yeti, aliens, churches, mosques, and synagogues, temples, dragons, giant worms, Atlantis, dolphins, truthers, birthers, witches, wizards,
and that fat fuck is walking around telling everybody that I'm
nuts, shaman healers, evangelists, conspiracy, doublespeak, stigmata, nonsense. Expose your sides. Thrust your hands, bloody, evidential, conclusive. Doubt even this.
The opinions and information provided on this podcast are intended for entertainment purposes only. All opinions are solely that of Glory Hole Studios, LLC. Cognitive Dissonance makes no representations as to accuracy, completeness, currentness, suitability, or validity of any information and will not be liable for any errors, damages, or butthurt arising from consumption. All information is provided on an as-is basis. No refunds. Produced in association with the local Dairy Council and viewers like you.